So, what does it mean? I used to work in a court environment. I hope that doesn't upset some of you, but I did. And whenever I walked into the magistrate's court, I would bow at the magistrate. I mean, there he sat. That's how that kind of a court, typical court, is laid out for you guys who've never been to court. Hopefully, most of you haven't been to court. Most of you, well, you know what I'm saying, that I'm hoping that you haven't been to court. But when you go to court, that's how it is, and that's the magistrate. So then you walk in and you bow to the magistrate, and then you proceed to sit in your seat. Now, I want you to imagine that somebody who lived in a different culture, and they lived in this culture 2,000 years ago, and they kind of transported here, present day, from 2,000 years ago in a different culture, and they put in our culture, and they are now sitting in that court. You got the picture? And they're watching me walk into that court, and they're watching me bow to the magistrate. Now, they know nothing about our culture. They know nothing about the way we do things in our culture. All they are doing is observing and trying to make sense of what they see from their particular perspective. Now, the best they can do is try and understand what they see now, 2,000 years later, in terms of what they do in their culture 2,000 years earlier. And in their culture, when somebody bows like that, it's an act of worship to one of their gods. And so when they bring their cultural understanding of what they see me doing in the magistrate's court, they come to the immediate conclusion, well, the magistrate must be some kind of god. And they start talking about this, and they come to this whole theory that in our culture, my culture today, magistrates are somehow divine, they're deity. And coming to that conclusion, the way they've come to that conclusion is they're trying to make sense of what they see from their perspective, which has nothing to do with our perspective. But then they start to do a little bit of research. And what they learn from their research is this, that it's actually totally different from what they thought. In fact, the person walking into the court is not bowing to the magistrate. All the person walking into the court is doing is recognizing the legal system of our country. They're simply recognizing that we are all subject to the laws of the land, and that the magistrate, not the person, but the office of magistrate, is simply representative of the law of the land. And so the magistrate is not divine. They're simply representative of the laws of the land. But unless someone explained that to you from your culture 2,000 years ago, you would think this is pretty weird. People read the Old Testament. They read the laws of the Old Testament. And some of those laws seem more than weird. They seem absurd. And so what do? With stuff that we don't understand? We tend to mock it, right? And I need to say, we still do that today. When we don't understand the laws of the Old Testament, we start mocking them. And I want to say that there's still laws in the Old Testament that we do not understand. For example, what do we make of this one? Do not cook a young goat in its mother's milk. I don't know. Maybe you're cleverer than me. I have no idea what they're talking about. There have been many people who have tried to guess what that means, but basically we don't know. It was a law that was given 3,000 years ago. It was a law that made sense 3,000 years ago. The people who heard that law, they said, oh yeah, okay, I understand that. We better not do that. But because we don't know what it means then, and this is so important when it comes to applying the Bible, because we don't understand what it meant then, we cannot decide how to apply the principle today. Just get that. If we don't understand what it meant then, we cannot make the application for today. However, many of those laws have been researched. And when we read them, initially, we might not make sense of them. When we read those laws initially, we might be like the person coming into the magistrate's court from a different culture. But there have been a lot of people who've done a lot of research on what it was like 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago. And as we come to understand the context, we get to understand what it meant. And when we understand what it meant 3,000 years ago, we are able to make the application of what it means today. Without understanding what it meant then, we cannot make the modern day application. This is a fundamental principle of Bible interpretation that I'm teaching you tonight. And learn it. It will save you from being led all over the place by people who read something and make a direct application without understanding what it meant in that context. Now, I want to explain to you what they meant today. I'm smacking you. Is that better? I can't hear myself as clearly. I thought it was better before. Thank you, Jan. On behalf of the Mensa tonight, is that better? Okay. You should have been here this morning as well, because I think I was clapping the people left, right, and center this morning as well. Okay, thank you. Okay, tonight I want to look at a few of those laws, and I want to explain to you what they meant then. And your job tonight is going to apply them in our culture. Okay? Your job tonight is going to be doing the job of a preacher. This is what a preacher's got to do. Preacher's got to understand what it meant then, so that we can make the application to today. And that's what I want you to do. I'm going to speak about one or two or three or four or five of the laws, depending how much time, and then you're going to say, okay, we understand now what it meant then. How can we apply it today? So this is what we're going to do. And then when we've done that, when we've discussed it, then we're going to move on to the next one. Now, here's your first one. Do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain. Do not muzzle the ox while it is treading out the grain. Deuteronomy 25, verse 4. Now, here's the picture. In fact, there's the picture of what it looked like. In those days, the oxen would be used to plow the fields. And once the grain was harvested, it would be put on the threshing floor. And then the oxen would pull this heavy sledge over the grain. And the sledge would crush the grain, the husks, and it would also trample the grain, and it would help in the breaking down of the husks. And so you would have these oxen walking over the grain. Now, a muzzle was something that was, you put over the you do this on vicious dogs, you know, never on my dog, but on dogs that are vicious, you put a muzzle on them so they don't bite people. Well, what really kind of stingy farmers would do is put a muzzle on their ox. And the Bible 3,000 years ago said, don't muzzle the ox that's treading the grain. You can see what happens to the poor ox if you did muzzle it. The ox couldn't eat, right? And so we have this law, don't muzzle the ox. Allow the ox to eat while it is busy working. Allow the ox to eat while it is busy working. Now, take a couple of minutes. Yeah, you've got somebody who is asking you, that's a strange thing. What does it mean? Well, now you know what it meant then. But how could you make the application 3,000 years in advance? You're a preacher. You've got to preach a sermon. What application could the preacher make that is relevant to us today? Don't look at me. You should be looking at each other and talking. What does it mean? And when you work that one out, I've got a further application of this one, which is used in the New Testament. So just talk about that for a few minutes. muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain? Is it about oxen that God is concerned? Surely he says it's for us, doesn't he? If others have this right of support from you, shouldn't we have it all the more? The Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. Now, some of you have jumped ahead and have seen how that application is to in spiritual work, that Jan and I, the church has said, look, there's preaching got to be done, and we don't have the time to do that, but we want you to do it, and meanwhile we will support you while you do it. And so you're asking us to, you know, tread the grain, but you're not then putting a muzzle on our nose and say, but we're not going to feed you. You're saying, well, you do that, and we will allow you to eat from the benefits of what you are doing. So that is, in the church context, what that means. And some of you jumped ahead of that before I got there. However, what about in a non-pastoral application? Because when that law was originally given, they weren't kind of pastors or anything like that. They were talking about physical animals. And I just think that we've got to realize that the SPCA isn't a new idea of modern day people, that right back then, God had a concern for animals as well. Look after the animals. You know, if they're going to be treading the grain, then let them eat as well. So it's also a thing about looking after the animals. If for example, but the application that Paul makes is for in a pastoral context. Here's another one. Leviticus 19:19. Do not mate different kinds of animals. Do not plant your field with two kinds of seed. Do not wear clothing woven with two kinds of material. So there you see that he's talking essentially about mixing things, right? Whether it's two kinds of animals, whether it's in your field having barley and grapes, whether it's having clothes. I guess in those days it might have been flax and wool. They wouldn't have had polyester rayon mixes in those days, but we've got them today. But it says don't mix things. If you've got one thing, keep it separate from the other things. Now, the background to that is that the Israelites were living in a strange land. And they were living with neighbors. I tell you what, and this is a confession, until I went to seminary, I had this idea that the Israelites kind of lived in this, I don't think I would have explained it like this, but this was in my mind, that they were lived in this like a sealed environment. That they were there and they were kind of sealed in. That they didn't have contact with other nations or neighbors and this kind of thing. This was my picture that I had in my mind. But in fact, the Israelites had neighbors. And their neighbors didn't worship their God. Their nations, their neighbors worshipped foreign gods. They lived in strange lands with neighbors who worshipped foreign gods. And they worshipped these gods in different strange kinds of ways. And they engage in strange kinds of practices. These were the neighbors of the Israelites. And so, just to embroider on this a little bit, what I've said, then the Lord said to Moses, say this to your people, the Israelites, I, the Lord, am your God, so do not act like the people in Egypt where you used to live, or like the people in Canaan where I'm taking you. You must not initiate their way of life. You can see what your neighbors do. I want you to be different. In other words, they were to be pure in what they did in their worshiping of the God, not mixing the practices of their heathen neighbors with their worshiping of God. And so what seems to be a strange law to an outsider is actually something which allowed them to look at their fields and to be reminded, okay, we don't mix. Or to see the animals, we don't mix. Or the clothes they wear, well, this is pure. It's only, there's no mixture here. So it was kind of a concrete reminder of the purity that they must have. They're not to mix and do what their neighbors do mixed with what they are doing. Now, you're a preacher. How would you apply this today? And what example would you give to help your church remember to be pure? Think about that for a moment. How would you apply that today? And Jan did something at when Byron and Lauren got married, and he got two different kinds of sands, you know, in a little jar. And you see what happens when you mix two different kinds of sands. And then they came up with oil and water. If you have a little thing on your mantelpiece with oil and water, and you shake it like this, and you see, well, oil and water don't mix. So you can put that in your mantelpiece, and every time you look at that, you remember, don't let's mix. Let's remain pure. So, you know, there's lots of stuff out there that you can think about in terms of a practical example of what that looks like, and a little aid to memoir of to remind your people, okay, purity, don't mix. When you build a house, make a parapet around your roof so that you may not bring guilt of bloodshed on your house if someone falls from the roof. Now, 3,000 years, they put that law out there. And obviously, it was put out there with a reason for it. The houses in those days had flat roofs, and people lived up on the flat roof. They slept on the flat roof in summer. And all kinds of people, old and young, would be up there. And so the law said, put a railing or a parapet around the roof that will prevent people from accidentally falling off the roof. How would you apply that today? Don't tell me, tell the folk, I'll come and listen to you. I think it's an interesting safety regulation, okay? But what is the principle behind that safety regulation? That's what I want you to talk about. In a modern day application, maybe in a non-building context, just in a general life situation. I gather that some groups find this a little bit obscure and feel that my example of Am I My Brother's Keeper was a red herring to get them off the right track that they were on. Remember when Jesus was teaching the people and it was getting late and the crowds were getting hungry? What did he tell his disciples to do? Feed them. Why did he tell them to feed them? Because he cared about them. He cared about them. Look, I'm big. I'm not going to fall off this roof. But what about others? I think about more than myself. I think about others. Jesus probably, I don't know whether he was hungry when he was teaching the people, but he looked at them and he saw they've got needs. Let me care for them. It's just a suggestion. The way that when we understand scripture, we've got to start with, what did it mean then? Well, then it meant we don't want people to fall off the roof. But why don't we want people to fall off the roof? Because we care about people. And I want to suggest that maybe it could be that. Here's one that's going to stimulate quite a lot of conversation. Do not cut your bodies for the dead or put tattoo marks on yourselves. I am the Lord. I just want to deal with the first one to set a context. In that culture, mourning for the dead was really important. And so the heathen nations around them would want to make themselves feel real pain for the people who had lost a loved one, and so they would lacerate their body so they could feel the pain of the person who'd lost somebody. And so it was a way of showing your seriousness in the way you were mourning, and it was also like a heathen bloodletting exercise on behalf of the gods for the one who had died. And I tell you this, you see, you go, yeah, but that's what they did. But if you don't understand that, you can't understand why they did it. You see? Okay. The point is that it's a heathen practice that they did. Now, in that context, we are told, do not put tattoo marks on yourselves. Ooh, dead silence. In that context, just as what they were doing, lacerating themselves, was for the gods, in those days, tattoos were a mark of loyalty to one of the gods. and a tattoo told people seeing that tattoo to which God they were loyal, to who, which God they worshipped, which means that tattoos which were forbidden, they were forbidden because they had religious significance. What does that have to say about the tattoos or body art which we see so much of today? And what is the spiritual application for people? There we are. I knew which tables would want to argue for and which table would want to argue against, and I wasn't wrong. I just want to say that I'm old. I think that a young person who has a tattoo today is going to regret it when they get to 50 or 60. I'm old, and I recognize that. However, us old people shouldn't go to the young people and say, the Bible says you're not allowed to have tattoos, because that verse doesn't talk about body art. Okay? That verse doesn't talk about body art. And also, as one table which shall remain nameless wants to say, well, the body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. Well, that verse also has got nothing to do with this. It's got to do with joining your body with a prostitute and making the two one. So even that one doesn't really wash. So my counsel to somebody who wants tattoos is, on a practical level, think really hard about it. Think hard about it, but I can't tell you not to do it from a biblical point of view. However, what the people were doing with tattoos was they wanted to worship their gods, their false gods. And so the principle about that, which I would not want to turn back on the person, those, that verse is about worshiping your God. In which ways can you worship God? And just take it off the whole tattoo thing and just talk about ways of worshiping God in different ways.